AI first. Before then, I've got to flick a tab, then I've got to say go live now in the Facebook group, and I think then it works. So it's super confusing. Anyway, we are live now. So welcome everybody to Brain Food Live on Air, episode 48. Episode 48. I'm delighted to be bringing it to you as we do every Friday. Super excited today because we've got an amazing show lined up. I'm always very motivated whenever Adam Gordon is not in the co-pilot seat. And today I'm pleased to say he's been upgraded once again by my man, Aaron Lintz. Aaron, how are you doing, sir?
Doing well. Glad to be here.
Great to have you on the show. Now, before we kind of get into it, just wanted to do a bit of housekeeping. So if everyone who is on Crowdcast platform now, if you're watching it live and you can hear me, just pop in a quick hello on the chat stream to say that you can do that. I always mess up the Facebook live stream, so apologies for people on Facebook if you can't see this right now. But if you can, please do comment on the stream there to say that, yes, Hung, I can hear you. And finally, to all of the friends out there on LinkedIn Live, if you're on my profile now and checking it out, can you just please say hello and make sure that I can see that you can see this and hear it? Okay, so we should be ready to go. We are talking sourcing mentality, but before we get into it, let's just remind ourselves a couple of housekeeping things. I need to firstly thank our sponsors today. So the sponsors of Brain Food Live episode 48 is Seen by Indeed. Seen by Indeed are, of course, one of the amazing sort of innovations that Indeed always bring out. They're one of the most innovative businesses, I think, in our space. And they're always coming out with new products and technologies and platforms and so on. Seen by Indeed is their matching platform for software engineers. So if you're hiring for tech people and you want to have a different solution, check out Seen by Indeed. I've just done the link share right there. Moving on. Aaron, for the few people who are watching this and who don't know you, can you just quickly introduce yourself and who you are and what you do?
I'm a hooligan. I've done some training and speaking on more of the technical kind of, I guess you could say, tactical aspects of sourcing. Some things that obviously trying to elevate the skill levels and get people just thinking creatively on the, you know, if everyone's swimming one way, you should think about swimming in different ways.
Yeah, and this is part of the reason why I was very excited to bring you on for this particular topic, Aaron, because sourcing and sourcing mentality, often we get confused. We think, hey, it's all about this cool tool or this whatever it is. But oftentimes the stuff I've seen you do that I think is really interesting is that you often take kind of mundane stuff, you know, things that everyone might use in one way, but then you figure out actually, if you think about it around the corners a little bit, you can use it in this way, and then you can get some much greater value out of it. And in fact, one of the examples was one of the most popular posts that was featured in Brain Food last week, which was the LinkedIn post, right? The post that you put out for SourceCon. And it was all about using what is simply a spreadsheet and LinkedIn recruiter. So very simple. Can you just explain quickly to the folks out there watching this what this technique was all about?
Yeah, I mean, it's a Google Sheet formula, but it would work just as well in Excel. And let's say, you know, there's all these scraping tools now. There's ways I can get a list of people from a meetup group or attendees. But if I'm going to do that in at scale and I want to try to get better at it, if you put the names in the columns rather than just searching for, randomly typing every time or cutting and pasting every time, you could at least simplify your work. And the goal would be to get putting it in the right field. So it'll put in their first name, put in the last name, put in the a location or keyword or company name. And yeah, it's just a way that you could do hundreds in a short amount of time. And even if you just can do that, then you can think about now messaging them all or now identifying where they live. And some of these platforms, you just have a name and you don't know where they live. You don't know maybe how deep their skill level is. So we still default to LinkedIn for some of those things. But yeah, it's a way to kind of organize your process.
You know what? I thought this is one of the key points of sourcing, I think, because it's about being hyper productive with the time that you've got. You know, almost everything that sources sort of share and teach, you can do manually. You know, you do it one by one if you wanted to. But you know what? No one's got 5 hours in a day. You know, if I can do this quickly, then I'm going to be better as a sourcer. It's as simple as that. So one of the things I think that teaches us, and by the way, I've just shared the link on the Crowdcast there. If you're on Facebook or LinkedIn, please just pull this out and share around. Really good post. But it's a productivity hack. It's like, hey, you can do this thing, and actually, instead of doing it sequentially, you can just use this technique to just rapidly do it in bulk and save you a bunch of time. And then you can obviously spend time, you know, on the communication or the personalization, all of those other things that you know, recruiters often get criticized for not doing. So let me take you all the way back to, you know, the past, Aaron. I mean, was there a moment when you started thinking along these lines? I mean, I've always been like a classic recruiter. You know, I was a telephone guy. I was able to speak to people, good on meetings. Candidates and generating candidates for me was almost like an administrative task. You know, I'd do the basics to get the candidates I need to do a placement, but I wouldn't necessarily dive deep. So can you take me through sort of how you developed this thought process? I mean, what was the journey like when you started thinking along these lines?
I mean, for the sheet or just in general, just how to...
Just in general in your career, man.
Yeah, I mean, I got into HR, right? And obviously realized it's not a place for innovative people. No offense to any HR professionals. It's definitely... a path for people who like to follow directions and tell people bad news and you know, assimilate. not for me. Next up was, you know, doing some sales marketing work. So I got into digital marketing and SEO work, and then back when that was fresh, realizing that you could, follow companies and learn tactics of how to get high page levels, and also just learning. This was back when we'd get sales leads from a phone book or from a directory of pages, and then as the digital world became easier, I could find directories of companies, groups that and associations that they were all linked to, and here's, you know, all the leads and all the people, all the contact information. It was, why buy leads when you can farm them yourself? And from that just led to pushing that into recruitment. And while it didn't always work with all of my bosses, I found my niche, you know. And I think there's an interesting article about that, how the matrix or the operations versus people who are, you know, the different T-shaped skill sets. We talk about, you know, who has the depth, who has the breadth, and how they can be aligned. It doesn't have to be one set of people that make, you know, X number of phone calls a day. It can be the people who are empowering those people or working towards the business objective, which is to make money rather than just hire people. So there's many different ways to approach it. And I think I just fell in the right place at the right time or worked it out that way.
Yeah, you know, so many things to unpack there, Aaron. I mean, firstly, I think for the folks who kind of moved from the agency world, recruitment agency world, into the in-house world, which I think loads of people make that sort of transition. You do tend to end up working full cycle as an agent, don't you? Because you run your own desk, you do everything end to end, and necessarily you can't get that deep in any particular skill because it is a fully rounded job. But then when sort of the company started hiring internally, we sort of just imported a bunch of recruiters and thought, right, you're going to do full cycle as well. But we're beginning to discover actually it might make more sense to diversify somewhat and have certain types of people focus on the things that they're good at, and not have just kind of stretch them into places where they're not comfortable or where they're not interested. You know, I know a lot of recruiters, and we had this chat on LinkedIn actually at some depth where, you know, is it a mentality thing that stops certain people from becoming sourcers or developing sourcing mentality? So is it a mindset as well as a skill set? And I'm inclined to think, yeah, you know, there's certain recruiters I know who are very successful, but they just not interested in doing the mining, the scraping, the technical part of the job. You know, they just think, hey, I'm a salesperson, I'm a relationship person, that's what I do. And I think, you know what, that's great. But this is where we need diversification of roles, because both of those folks have got a part to play.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's where I, when I did find that niche, or where I found that opportunity to fit in well, was, I would do what many recruiters do, which is, you know, I'd find that ideal perfect candidate and try to push them hard on the client. And, you know, give them a slate of fairly average people and say, yeah, the cream rises, pick that person. And then I learned from trial and error that I can't do that. I have to have backups, and I have to have other people that maybe get two hires, you know, don't just settle on that. I guess you'd say hitting average was very successful, but the business, the KPIs that they focused on was volume. And wasn't successful in that role. And the managers and people would always say, but damn, he's good at these skill sets. And if you put him in the right opportunity, he can be successful. Yeah. And so I'd carve out my niche, you know, until there was a title.
You know what? That actually is that's thankfully you had a welcoming environment that understood, you know, your skills I'm probably too generous with the organizations there, but I guess I was kind of going along the lines of, you know what, I've seen sort of certain businesses that are very, very focused on the type of recruiter they want. And if you're not the guy dialing 9, you know, every 10 seconds or so, you're out the door, because the perception is this is a telephone-based job. But I think over the last 10 years or so, I would say from the 2010s to 2020s, for sure, the year just that we're having now, it's been like a real deepening of the understanding of what sourcing is, that it is a separate kind of skill set, certainly a subset of recruiting. No one's saying it isn't recruiting, but it's a separate type of function, and it needs a different types of skills, different type of mindset. And as you say, if you're smart enough, you can get some really high value people that can do a different part of the recruiting job for your business that could be super effective. A couple of questions for you. You mentioned SEO. I wonder whether your early dabbling in SEO had some sort of impact in you, Aaron, in terms of like opening your eyes a little bit and how the internet worked, and you know, it turns out it looks like this rather than, you know, just looking at graphical interfaces all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I found Irina and some of these and Chally and Glenn and their information, how to peel back websites and, you know, how to find what you're looking for was extremely useful. I remember...
Before you go on, I mean, I think some people know who these folks are because they're the heroes of sourcing. But let me just repeat, Irina Shameva. If someone please share the link to her LinkedIn there. She's one of the earliest, I think, in terms of popularizing what sourcing is. She still writes an awesome blog. I love her, you know, do it today type of tips. You should totally check that out. It's a booleanstrings.com, I believe, is her website. And then you mentioned Shally Steckel, who is still an active sourcer, I believe, but also a trainer, a recruiter, and all those types of things as well. Also a book publisher. So he is also online and someone you should pay attention to. Thank you, Michael, by the way, for doing that. And, of course, Glenn Cathy. Glenn, I think, was probably the most important amplifier of the idea of sourcing, at least as far as I was concerned. And he might reject that, actually, because he probably doesn't consider himself to be a great communicator. But actually, I think he did an amazing job with Boolean Black Belt. And someone needs to share that on a chat stream because everyone needs to read that still. I mean, some of the content that's there, 4 or 5 years old, you can still get value out of it. It's incredible how long tail some of the stuff that Glenn has put out there.
I mean, he had that, like that scientific method approach. It was like so easy to, you know, like I said, if you come from a world and you're looking for chaos, you're looking for organization in a sea of chaos, even like started, you know, coming up with names like the dark matter. What do you call things that can be found but aren't, you know, visible?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, coming up with things that that I think are constantly applicable. And so yeah, I took some of that knowledge. It was indirectly related to recruitment, but it had value to me in this marketing world. And I was selling HR marketing, software services and so forth. And yeah, just but getting back to, you know, doing telephone, it just simply wasn't, you know, it wasn't my calling. You know, there were literally people who could dial for dollars and make X number of calls a day, machines. And I could do it, but it wasn't my niche. It wasn't, valuable time.
100%. It's a waste of time, right? It's like having a person who's a great running back and asking them to play quarterback or something using American vernacular. You could probably do it, good enough athlete. But why would you when you've got a quarterback already? You know, so it's almost like understanding that there's lots of ways in which this can be done, and actually some of these are complementary. And one of the real, I think, positive things that have come out of the development of sourcing as a subset, a career path, is that it's opened the door for different types of people to come into the industry that would have washed out in the telephone era. If it was still phone based and there was no internet or whatever, those folks would have came in, did their 2-3 months, and they would have washed out and we would have lost them from the industry. But because suddenly social media, in particular Web 1, but definitely Web 2, that suddenly emerged, and we thought, actually, we need people to understand this and understand how to mine this information that's coming out at us, because it could be super valuable. And of course now, you know, people have got training businesses and what have you, because big companies want to learn about this now. You know, it's caught up to the idea that, yeah, you can't just sit on LinkedIn and expect that to just be manna from heaven, especially not for the hard to hire. Before we bring on Guillaume and Catherine, because as a bonus, we've got these two other heroes to come on board to join us for the show. Aaron, I just wanted to cover a few things. From your view of the question, how do you develop a sourcing mentality? Firstly, do you agree that you can? And if you can, how do you do it? If you can't, how do you look for someone with a sourcing mentality?
I do agree that all recruiters, especially modern era recruiters, have to be sourcers. Their depth doesn't have to be as great, but they still have to have that desire and willingness to learn and adapt. So if I start from that baseline, it's more about how do they evolve those skill sets? How do they add to them? So number one, it has to be that buy-in. Like I said, having a manager or boss that saw the potential, saw the opportunity to make exceptions to the KPIs and so forth. Without that, I wouldn't be here. So it has to be that from a top down, that there's value in exercising and rather than just doing the work. So I'd say that. So then it's optimizing the tools and skills that you have today. So are you using the tools you have effectively? You know, that's there. So you can push that as the return on investment that the business will receive, because we're going to maximize our value.
Example, we're spending 50K on LinkedIn. You can come in, or a sourcing trainer might be able to come in and say, okay, you're obviously not getting optimal usage out of that 50K. Do you want to actually improve it? And you can sell that into the business, and I'm sure the users would be keen to get better utilization out of the tools that they sit on every day.
Yeah, are you just posting your jobs, or are you making advertisements? You know, the things that we take for granted, but sometimes the bigger the business, the more entrenched they are in the status quo, and we just have to talk to them about, like, this is an advertisement. You're trying to reach an audience. And how do you reach an audience? It's with a message catered to them. And are you rotating your jobs more frequently? And these tasks can be automated. This is, doesn't have to be manually done. This can be done, you know, on a rotation or in a way that that's fully or mostly automated. And yeah, as somebody mentioned, Aaron, with algorithms, you know, we have the potential to do these things. So optimization is key, I think. And then it's that strategy method of, we have our inbound leads, we have our outbound leads, and we have our referrals. And, you know, a typical recruiter is just fill the job. They don't care where the person comes from. But if it's an internal, if you're an inside corporate recruiter, then you do care, because referrals are highly valuable, even if it's just letting your internal people know that they're being heard, that people who hand, if they hand you a lead, it's going to be given, you know, high touch. And those are the things that they can learn to appreciate that may not have an ROI, but they do, because most companies I've ever worked for, the ratio of referrals to hire is probably 3 or 4 to 1 versus, you know, inbound, which are hundreds to one. So when you nurture those things, you get you do get return on investment. So it's a business win. It's teaching the recruiters how to appreciate what the business value is. And then also, yeah, so you're talking about strategic things, and those I think are easily taught, because it's, the recruiters hopefully have that business acumen and the ability to adapt, and they can see that. And then it's all about experimenting. It's taking a, let's test this theory. How do we test this theory? I think that if we do this, we can attract more diverse candidates. And if we're going to do that, let's test it, and then let's measure it. And we can't do that unless we're taking, taking data quality seriously, and we have metrics, and we can experiment. And so, getting them involved in that, and that means working. I'd say really it means getting people from different different departments and categories, bringing in somebody from marketing, bringing in somebody from leadership, so that there's collaborative buy-in, makes a world of difference.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, from my understanding of the things you've said there, Aaron, this is almost like thinking about the strategic positioning of the direct sourcing function within a business. Like, how do we elevate that? But also, how do we make bigger impact? And the way to do that is obviously to connect with other departments and not just operate as a, you know, a CV engine, let's say, which is what the expectation might be initially from the business. So I think, you know, one thing I want to kind of separate at this point, because there's going to be a lot of people watching this that have come from both the in-house side and the third-party agency side. And I think one of the most interesting differences, we kind of use similar terminology, but I think the function does alter once you kind of are inside a business rather than supplying to it. Working on third-party agency, a lot of people in the LinkedIn conversation I had earlier this week were saying, hey, sourcing typically is like a junior entry role to consultant. So you come into the industry, you're a graduate, you're 18 years old, whatever it is, first thing you're going to do, company's not going to let you loose on a customer. No, they're going to say, you know what, just don't talk to anybody, go find some candidates. Maybe then you'll start making some calls, but two candidates first, and you don't speak to customers until you become a consultant or have some experience. So agencies, I still think, perceive sourcing as the activity of sourcing, finding candidates, very much as a junior role, a junior thing to do. Whereas internally, I think that's shifted somewhat, because we're beginning to understand that it's critical to have direct sourced candidates because it can give us opportunities to present employer brand more efficiently. Very difficult to do employer brand through a third party. So you need to do it typically through a person that works on the payroll in your business. And especially for these kind of highly skilled, hard to hire, transformational talents type of people who are going to come in and make a true difference to your company. How do you go and recruit those folks? Maybe you don't do that purely by an advert, or you don't do that through third-party agent as easy as you did in the past. Therefore, you know, the role of agency maybe, or the role of sourcing, is starting to evolve.
Well, I was going to say, from the agency side, I think that they can find people who can, like I said, push, you learn to utilize their database. There's and not just in the cursory way of what somebody's title is today. Look at people who, you know, haven't had their CV updated recently, and kind of figure out the strategies and tactics that can be experimented with, where the advertisements are placed and which ones are effective. So they're going to get more into the data. Obviously, they can focus on the business piece as well as where do we get our better margins, rather than how many hires do we get, what achieves business success? Because there's a dramatically different thing than hiring somebody that only makes me a few pounds a week versus one that I can bill out much greater.
You know what? This is totally true. But I remember back in my day, and when I'm aging myself now, because we're now rewinding back, you know, to the pre-social era. But the candidate database was always the thing that the boss wanted you to use, because obviously you save on ad spend and all the rest of it. But no one used it because it was like, oh, a horrible, you know, a system. Yeah, whatever the products were, they were horrible, difficult to use. No one actually adminned it properly. So you're asking salespeople to actually do the admin on this and tag candidates. No, it's never going to happen. So it was a complete mess. Even though it was like 100,000 candidates in there, you know, clearly everyone we needed to ever place was in that system. We just couldn't retrieve it. So of course we just went straight away, let's post the ad on Monster somewhere and get some new candidates in. Anyway, before we continue, let's bring in some of our guests here, because we've also got Catherine Robinson and Guillaume Alexandre waiting for us. And I want to bring them on screen because they've got some very interesting experience also. I think we've all tracked a similar path to a certain degree. But at the same time, I'm kind of interested to see, you know, what we can share together when it comes down to this sourcing mentality idea. Like, if we were to get raw people in, and we wanted to say, we're going to make them sources. Like, what the hell are we teach? What's the first thing we teach this person? You know, they're walking in, they're thinking, you know what? I can do an and/or statement on Google, and that's more or less it. Or I can push an advert, and I can distribute it to these types of places. That's how I get my candidates. Or these days, probably the main way in which people are doing it is kind of cranking the LinkedIn machine and just pumping out emails. So that's the question I want to tackle. Oh, and here we go straight away. How smooth was that? I was actually really impressed. I thought getting four people on screen at any one time was guaranteed disaster. Multi-streaming through three channels, guaranteed not going to work. But hey, been totally smooth so far. So anyway, Guillaume Alexandre, how are you doing? Good to see you. Can you introduce yourself very quickly? What do you do?
Sure. So my name is Guillaume. I am French. I live in sunny Geneva, Switzerland. I have got my own business and I work as an external sourcer for internal recruiters. So I'm like the sourcing arm for internal recruiters. I don't work with agencies or anything else. I just work on very hard to find roles for TA folks who've understood that, yes, sourcing is a real profession and they need help on very specific roles.
Actually, I didn't know that's what you did, man. So basically, well, you know, I'm fairly ignorant of most things. But basically, your job is to come in as the sourcing arm of an existing TA function.
Yes, exactly.
Got it. Very good, Guillaume. We'll dive back into that experience a bit in due course. But let me first go to Catherine as well. Catherine, for the few people that don't know you, can you just introduce yourself and who you are and what do you do?
Yeah, can I check that you can hear me?
Yep, no problem.
Yep. Oh, brilliant. Yeah, I wasn't sure when I was signing in. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm Catherine, and you can usually find me online as the Sorceress. yeah, that came back from the era of the internet where nobody used their real name, but we've all got over that now. Yeah, I run my own business too. At the moment, I am mostly working with a website called Recruiting Gym. I'm the sourcing coach. And yeah, so we work with mostly recruitment agencies at the moment to provide a platform where they can come and log in and ask questions and kind of get help from various experts in the recruiting industry. And then I've got a couple of other clients who are small recruitment businesses who I help them as a kind of a plug-in sourcing resource.
Right. Amazing. Great to see this evolve, actually, where, you know, experienced recruiters like yourself have developed a sourcing career, kind of pop out and then be able to trade as someone who's like almost a plug-in consultant for companies that need this support. So you're perfect people, I think, to join our show. Question I just asked Aaron before I brought you two on was, new person coming in, raw material, totally new or using cliched ways to find candidates. What's the first thing you would say, you would teach that person? What is the most important thing to learn in order to give them a foundation on tackling sourcing challenges in the future? Go to you, Guillaume, to begin with.
Yeah, I would tell the people that we are not talking to humans first. We're talking to data. Okay, so we first find data to identify people. And then once we've got a manageable pool of data, then we switch to the human part. Okay, so if you don't understand how to find data, how data is organized, that LinkedIn is actually a database and database works a certain way, and you focus on, oh, I found a person and let's find another person, etc., you're not doing the job properly. If you want to put it in a different way, it's like you're here to chop wood. And if you find one tree and you find it beautiful and then you do everything with that one tree and then you move to another one, etc., you're never going to take the whole forest down, okay? What a sourcer is going to do is identify how people behave, what are things, how it works, understand the role fully, okay? And then collect the data that you need, find within that data the exact match that you need, and then move towards contacting people. So for me, sourcers have to understand that their job is to convert people into candidates, and when recruiters are converting candidates into employees. Okay, so we don't talk to people first, we talk to data, we convert that data into people, and then we talk to the people. So we've got two brains.
You know what? And that kind of might lend itself to having two people at some point. I mean, some companies might actually separate those functions and say, you know what, you are there as a data collection function. I've got this person who does the contacts, and that's a different function. And you can actually have two people doing that. So it lends itself to this modularization of the recruiting job, right?
You can be the best chef in the world. If you've got the wrong ingredients, you can't be a proper chef. So a sourcer is here to bring the proper ingredients so that the chef, the recruiter, who is going to choose who's going to get the job, is able to do its job properly. So we work hand in hand.
Before I go to you, Catherine, I just want to dive deep, just a little bit deeper on what Guillaume has said there. You mentioned it's important to actually be more comprehensive in the data collection, the data intake, which I think recruiters tend not to do, especially, when I say recruiter, by the way, I'm referring specifically to myself. If I found a great candidate, boom, I'm on the phone, that'll do. And then I'll find some filler candidates or whatever, just a stock up the shortlist. That's the classic approach. So that was me. If that's not you, then I apologize for me kind of universalizing my experience. But generally speaking, that's how I understood the game back in the day. But you're saying this is wrong. You need to be more comprehensive. Question is why?
Because the people who have the most keywords are not the best people. If you're just focusing on pure keywords, you're going to find not the best person, just the person who has the most keywords. If you give me a job spec, and most job descriptions are absolutely shit because they're going to say, we need somebody who is, I don't know, a good team player. I can't find that. I can't find team players. I can find skills. And if skills is just Java, I want to know why. I want to know how. I want to know what a day-to-day life, because I'm going to have to contact those people. So what a day-to-day life is going to be, I need to know absolutely everything. And I usually get all the info straight from the manager about where do people like you hang out? What do you guys do for a daily basis? What trainings do you go to? Where do you live? Like, where are you? Where is your crowd? Where is your tribe? That's what I want to know. On top of course, the technical skills that I need to understand. But you can be a Java developer in one environment and be absolutely not fit for another environment when you are both Java developers, if we're just talking tech.
Yeah. So the main point is it's about the quality of the candidate. You can't make that assessment if you just pick up the first dude. You know, you have to have a comprehensive sweep of the market in order to make a little bit more. Yeah. So it's basically more data, isn't it? So
and it's data driven. The whole difference is around data. Back in the days of agency days and everything, what you had was, as a company, you had to call an external agency, because that company would have the data there in their ATS, in their system and everything, and would sell it to you very expensively one by one. Times have changed. There is 750 million people just on LinkedIn alone. Okay. When is the last time a company has hired somebody who did not have a LinkedIn profile? So the question is not, do I need someone external to help me find that person? They exist. They are there. Have I got the time, the capacity, the skills to go and do it myself? So it's all really about how you handle data at a large scale. And I come back to Aaron there, because yes, handling data is key to sourcing. And then it's like pole vault, you know? When you find one guy, you have no idea whether this guy is actually jumping 4 meters or 5 meters, or if he's a 6 meter guy. Sometimes you don't need a 6 meter guy, and you need to have several of them and enough of them to see how they jump, who jumps the highest, if you need the highest jumper, and sometimes you don't. And to find the person who jumps at the exact right height for your company, for that specific role.
So it's also about then comparative data, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because again, the more you have, the more confident that you've got. Maybe the first guy you found was the best guy, but you don't know that until you've actually gone through a thorough and rigorous recruiting process.
Yes.
Okay, cool. I'm going to go to Catherine. Catherine, same question to you. First thing that tabula rasa, young person coming into the industry, whatever it is, what would you teach this person in order for them to have a foundation in the sourcing discipline?
Yeah, I think very similar to Guillaume. It's almost, there's research to be done before you start sourcing. There's pre-sourcing. Kind of don't get excited and just, I need to, go look for names of people on Google or LinkedIn, or it's more about teaching that person to take a deep breath and ask the questions they need to ask, and then find the answers that they need as well. So, I mean, I always think about it. If you lose your wallet, you don't think, "Oh my goodness, okay, I'm just going to start in the first room in my house, open all the drawers, look under, all the cushions on the sofa and things, and then move on to the next." No, you think to yourself, okay, where's the most likely place that I left my wallet? When did I last have it? Oh, well, it was in the trouser pocket of my jeans. So you think, right, okay, where did I leave my jeans? They're in the laundry. I'll go check. Is it there? So it's about thinking, where do these people hang out? And the hiring manager is often the best person to talk to about that. I often ask them, if I were to walk up behind you when you were on your laptop, what tabs would you have open? Questions like that, actually making it really real for those people, because sometimes
should a sourcer have open?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know, what tab do I always have open? I almost always have various social media open. LinkedIn is almost always open. Email is always open. There's usually various spreadsheets, Google Sheets open that I'm kind of flitting between. I think we're not one tab open kind of people. I think most of us have got quite a bit going on, quite a few things that we're monitoring and keeping an eye on. I love a good social media dashboard, something like Hootsuite, plenty of columns going so that I can always be finding new interesting people to look at. But that's something where I guess you figure out what people who you want to know talk about, and then you slowly develop these machines that help bring them to you over the course of months and years.
Yeah, I want to dive back into that. But Guillaume, you had your finger up. So
exactly. I've got three screens, okay, in front of me always. One on the left is all about social, talking to people, Facebook, understanding, asking questions, what I need to know. In front of me is what I'm searching for, okay? So it's like food of tabs of LinkedIn, of everywhere I could be looking, scraping, all that type of things. And on the right, I've got the data that I've collected already. So it's usually an Excel on the right. Because I'm going to collect the data and then I'm going to play with that data and I'm going to know where I am there on the right. So it's like social, search, and data.
That's really cool. That's a really good innovation. I mean, like I say, there's a guy there, is it Michael, who's saying the same thing. It's absolutely right. It's very difficult to do everything on one screen. You get massive tab overload, but also you get distracted, right? So you need to actually have looking at different things. I love the fact that your full focus is the searching. This is the place of work. That's the screen in front. On the left, maybe this is the harvesting or the early investigation stuff, you know, the conversational mediums, perfect. And on the right is, I will not say final product, but it's the output of the first two screens, right? This is the spreadsheet. So,
I think perfect is three screens, isn't it? Sometimes one of my screen becomes media. So it's a crowdcast like this. I might have on one screen, usually the screen to my left, because that one is sort of slightly out of my eye line. So I can just listen. When something gets interesting, I can go, and have a look, pay attention. But I can just be kind of getting on with things while people are talking, or you know, I might have audio coming out of that screen from a podcast or something.
By the way, for poorer people like Erin and myself, who can only afford one screen, there are on-screen solutions like OneTab, which is a Chrome extension, and I believe that just basically gives you the opportunity to flip between different looks. I'm personally using a product called WorkOwner. I don't know whether you know that, but it does the same thing. Basically, I've got one is social. So yeah, definitely I'm online. I'm talking to people. I'm doing that stuff, but I can't be on there all the time. Otherwise you get hammered. So the second screen is going to be what I'm doing. So I'm not doing sourcing anymore, but there is a focus screen where there's deeper work to be done. And I think there's a third screen, but obviously I never use it. Look, I can't even remember what it is, but it's probably some nonsense. But yeah, it's an effective way to organize your tabs. So if you're one of these people that actually finds themselves increasingly getting, you know, you're clicking off 30 tabs by the end of the day, you need to investigate one of these options. OneTab, WorkOwner. I'm actually going to share that as a link for people to check out as well. Aaron, I wonder whether you could share also your view. Like, how do you set up your how do you set up your workstation? What's your technique here?
I mean, I think what I'm hearing here is these are people who are methodical. These are people who have an approach, and they have a reason. And that's part of the thing, that there is no wrong answer when it comes to these things. If you have something that works well for you and it's highly repeatable, then keep doing it. I learned, you know, early on, the people who, you know, were using Outlook, that you could rename a message so that you could go back and search for it after. And I was like, damn, that's brilliant. Why didn't somebody teach me that 3 years ago? If you're not using a password manager, why? Why are you breaking your back to try to remember passwords or reusing the same terrible password? Why aren't you using shared templates in your messaging and outreach? And why aren't you using a tool to check your grammar to make sure that it reads the way you think it reads? Microsoft Word now it'll speak for you, so it'll read it to you. If you really want to hear what your message sounds like in words, you just hit "Say it to me." It's like learn to use these little tricks. If somebody's been in this business and hasn't learned how to use Control C and Control copy and paste, my Lord, I mean, get yourself organized.
Can I just defend the copy paste and numbskulls here? Because I did not know how to use like a clear format copy paste until about 2 years ago. Yeah, exactly. Where you could actually wipe out the formatting. I used to copy paste and then have to use some pasting function inside the spreadsheet. Then I realized actually there's a way to do that. So even basic keyboard skills may be a starting point, actually. Like we may have presumed that most people have a certain level of keyboard usage, understanding how to use these shortcuts that exist in most keyboards. But that is probably something that we should make sure on and benchmark before we kind of move on to anything else, because we don't know whether
they ever hire people if that was your. I've met enough people that wouldn't even know how. I mean, again, if they learn how to right click, they're like level one. They're pod ones, right? And you can work with a pod one. You can work with somebody who has at least figured out what works for them. But these are things that are just simple wastes of time and wastes of mental capacity. You shouldn't be worried about how to do these things. You should just adapt them to your everyday and then laugh at the people 2 years younger than you that haven't figured them out yet.
Okay, so what I'm getting from everyone here is that productivity is definitely one of the key kind of themes within sourcing. It's about making efficiencies when you can. And that obviously gives you the opportunities to do it at scale, because if you figured out a hyper-efficient way to do it, you can do it at scale. And that's when the real value of the sourcing function comes in, when you seem to be doing things like massively faster than someone else who doesn't have this skill set. The second thing is basically deeper tool usage. Like there is a technical aspect to this. And I know there's people out there that do phone sourcing and all the rest of it, which is its own kind of technique. I totally get it. Maureen Cherie, by the way, if anybody's interested in phone sourcing, she's probably still the one that people look to. Some amazing things that she does. But let's face it, most sourcing is online. You're looking at a screen, typing into a keyboard, getting stuff out. So that type of sourcing, it's about deepening your understanding of the usage. Those two elements, what else makes a good sourcer? I mean, what else have you spotted in an extraordinary person you thought, that's a great sourcer? What makes them different from the average? Guillaume?
I think that for me, just talking about myself, the two main qualities I have, I'm lazy and I'm persistent. I'm lazy because if I'm doing something twice, I'm asking myself, why is it not automated already? Okay. I've seen people spending days copy pasting things from one sheet to another. I'm like, no, learn to scrape. It's going to be faster. And then do it once, twice, three times, and then it takes 2 seconds. The other day I had to copy, like, for True Geneva that I'm organizing, like 80 different themes of potential tracks, whatever. I'm like, no, I'm going to scrape it because it's faster. It just makes sense. And the second thing is I'm persistent. I will never, ever stop until I found what I want. Okay. And I think what helps me.
Terrifying. But yes, go on.
Lazy and persistent. Yes. I think, to be honest, what helps me is actually what I'm going to talk about at SourceCon
in Seattle.
I'll be there next month. Is about a neurodiversity that nobody has ever touched in our industry, which is ADHD. I've got ADHD, so hyperactive disorder, whatever, which means that my brain goes super fast, and it's genetic, and I can hyper-focus on things, okay? So when I'm hyper-focused on something, I go really, really, really fast and straight to the point, and I get what I want. And so when I'm excited about a new role, that's why I work for several companies at the same time, because I only take the jobs that are interesting. When I'm excited about a role, in half a day, I kill the amount of work that some other people would take a week, just because it's my thing. I'm in my zone and I'm just crushing it. So I'll leave a little bit of suspense, because I'm going to talk quite extensively about that in Seattle for those who come. And it's going to be fun. I think I found something there.
Yeah, well, anyway, someone who's going to SourceCon, please share the link to that. I think people might want to check that out. And there's probably material for people who can't go to Seattle to check out later. But that's really interesting, Guillaume. I love the 2 points you made. Laziness, that's the kind of sort of determination not to repeat. This is why I'm not a good sourcer, because you know what, I'm a hard worker. I would kind of pound through it, you know, in an inefficient way, because I think, this is at least the way I know. But actually, maybe the mentality of a sourcer is fundamentally about, this is just annoying. actually a programmer mentality is this way as well. When, you know, oftentimes when you encounter a problem in programming, it is an efficiency problem more than just a functional problem. Like, how can you do this more efficiently than you otherwise would be the case? Okay, good stuff. How about you, Catherine? What would you say is a quality of a good sourcer that you think needs to be, well, you've identified as a result of your training and as a result of the work that you've done?
I think for me, it's somebody who just doesn't have a fear of technology and or a fear of breaking anything. It's somebody who will just weigh in and press all the buttons. What does this do? You know, and the way I'm going to find out is I'm going to press it. I'm going to see what it does. Or there must be a better way to do this. I'm going to Google it. You know, that person who just thinks I'm going to Google it is going to, you know, go a long way, because a lot of people will just, you know, frown at things or think, oh, I need to ask a person or I need to get some training, and somebody else will just be like, I'm going to Google it. Somebody else must have had this problem and will have written about it. And, you know, 99 times out of 100, somebody else has had that problem and you, you know, you find their solution. I've seen in the chat a few people saying about scraping, and I would say that it's not my strongest suit. I kind of know how to do what I've needed to do, if that makes sense. So, you know, I've got this big list of people in LinkedIn and I really want it in a spreadsheet. And so I would go and I would use Dataminr or something like that. And they've got some great YouTube videos and things that go along with the tool. And, you know, that's been enough for me to just, you know, bodge something together, which gets out what I want or what I need. And I think that's a good mentality for a sourcer, just somebody who's like, well, I can get this to do what I need it to do in a reasonable amount of time. So I'm winning.
You know what? That's super interesting, because this ability to find what you don't know, you know, you're Googling, it's a mentality as much as it is a Boolean thing. You know, can you, do you understand, for instance, that YouTube has a ton of information about how you solve some basic technical problems? This is like the biggest educational resource that's out there, second biggest database on the planet, I think, in terms of usage. And yet, you know, that a lot of recruitment companies actually ban the use of YouTube, because it's perceived to be purely just entertainment. It's true. It's like, it's locked down. You can't use it. So you think, oh, wow, you're literally crippling your ability of your workers to accumulate knowledge, in the fear that they're going to be spending time, you know, watching, you know, gaming videos or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Oh, Smith said. Can you repeat that, Aaron? We had some sort of wipe out of the audio there when we talked.
I said, I think Marvin Smith posted in there, hoping that that some of the agency folks hadn't figured these things out yet, because there's a dichotomy there still.
Well, I've been thinking about this myself, about why agency basically don't take to sourcing as well. And it's not because of any kind of quality, you know, character-wise or anything of that type. It's purely because of what the metrics are, and then it's not aligned to doing the sort of work that sources typically do. I think sources need bandwidth, in the sense that, you know, to your point, Guillaume, going through the long research and all that type of stuff, harvesting the full marketplace, from an agency point of view, I can understand the pressure being applied to someone who did that to say, hey, why are you spending so much time sourcing candidates? You've already got two that are placeable. Get these people out the door. And so that pressure, I think, leads to full cycle agency recruiters to basically have a mentality of what's the quickest way? Fast, fast, fast. Yeah. It's a speed thing. And that's the main reason why I think sourcing hasn't really stuck in agency world.
Agency people are sales guys, okay? And it's great, but what they have to do is sell data, sell people towards clients, and they are competing against others. So the faster they sell, the better it is for them. And ask, it's simple. Ask an agency recruiter if he has done a good year. The answer will be a number, okay? Ask a sourcer if he has done a good year, and the answer will be talking about the people he has placed, the type of roles he has worked on, and things like that. It's never going to be a figure.
All right. So on that note then, I mean, we're getting a lot of nods on screen and also people saying, yes, that's true on the chat stream. Are you saying that sourcing has no place in a recruitment agency environment?
It has, as long as they want. I don't know. I'm more an advocate towards end clients. You're spending millions on your employer brand, and then you're talking to agencies that are not leveraging on it. Okay. Instead, get sources in-house, okay, that will leverage on your brand fully, okay, that will get you the right people you need at probably a higher level because they will be able to take more time to do the things properly, okay, and you'll get your agency costs. There is no questions. I've worked with a company. They were spending 3 million Swiss francs, and in 2 years with two sources, they went down to zero. Two people that bring back the company 3 million, should be a walk in the park. The thing is, it doesn't come out from the same budget, so it's an HR budget, and it's the manager's budget on the other side, so you don't really care about how much you spend external. There are different things like that. So I don't know what agencies are doing, okay? I don't think that companies should be buying data away at that type of price from agencies. I wish them well. Okay, because I'm sure if they're still alive, it's because people are paying the fees and people are happy. And probably not all the companies and definitely not all the SMEs are willing to have internal teams. I'm just saying that if you start to look at your actual cost, at how much you're spending in your employer brand on one side, okay, and you should be asking yourself, when is the last time I hired somebody who did not have a LinkedIn profile? Just that, just LinkedIn, okay? And then you say, how about I try to do something my way?
And yeah, well, Guillaume, I think it's very clear, sort of your position, I think, it makes a very strong argument. But there are kind of circumstances where a company would prefer to use an agent and where it would be the right thing to do it. We can explore that if we still have a bit of time. But Catherine, did I notice that you wanted to say something there? Because you're very polite in putting your hand up, and I want to reward that politeness.
Oh, thank you. I was just thinking the agency clients that make the best use of me, because a lot of the things that I do inevitably are kind of long game strategies. You know, it's not something that is just going to be, you know, quick bums on seats mentality. And the agencies that make the best use of me tend to be like hyper niche. You know, they're small agencies, just a few people, and they really specialize in something. So, you know, that in-house team that is turning to them, it's something that you know, they can provide a fast solution and a really highly targeted solution. So, you know, you're saving the company money, whereas if their internal recruitment team had to get up to speed to do the same job, there might be an empty role there for a while, which would cost the business money. So I think that's the environment where recruitment agencies, I think, are doing best, where they can, you know, where they can have a little bit more of a long game mentality, really know a niche, and, you know, be able to step in and do things quickly.
Yep. Any thoughts on that, Aaron, where the role of sourcing is in recruitment agencies? I mean, do you see it? There's a reason
too much help either. But I know in other countries, in different countries, there's different companies that have levels of maturity as far as what they need. I think what Guillaume said, understanding the market does help sell. You know, you say, you know, you need to hire this person quickly because this is the total available talent pool for your market. And if you don't hire this person, you're going to spend another 3 months. And what does that cost you? You know, what is the opportunity cost of not hiring that person? And so if you can arm a good salesperson with that kind of data, they can close more people. I mean, I would say that there's value in it. It just, it's coming at it from a different angle.
Yeah, I mean, the way I'm thinking about it, and by the way, I'm so far away from the agency game myself these days, so my kind of internal reference points are well out of date. But I'm thinking that, to Catherine's point, a niche agency supplier might make better use of sourcing because they've got a vested interest actually in thoroughly understanding their particular marketplace. So if they can get better at sourcing, then that makes perfect sense. less so if you're a generalist that, you know, a new job comes in, it could be whatever. Makes no sense to be deep in everything. You can't actually do that. One function that's always had a sourcing kind of group is, of course, exec search. They've always had that consultant researcher split, where the researcher, you know, is ostensibly a sourcer, even though I know no one that works in that field, so I can't tell you, you know, whether they've got sourcing skills in the modern sense, but they were candidate identifiers back in the day. And that's where you had the split of people providing the candidate data for the consultant to then approach and to connect with and to build relationships with and so on. Go on, Guillaume.
This to me comes from the fact that an executive search firm, all right, is just like a sourcer, except they are on a real, like, face-to-face niche environment. Like, for example, I'm in Geneva. There are people who are great as headhunters because they know all the private bankers, because they go and play tennis with them. Okay, and that's how they gather the data that they will then sell to the companies. And having researchers that will use other tools and other techniques to nurture that data and get them to engage with the right people, that still goes in the agency data pool of things, which is, so it makes absolute sense to have that in-house for an exec search. Because when you're niche and when you're high end and when you're everything, it makes perfect sense. To me, I have met several researchers. I haven't been technically impressed by many, to be honest. I'm more impressed by Aaron and Catherine that I've ever been by an exec researcher. But I would love to be proven wrong. I would love to meet.
Yeah. I spoke to an exec search owner of an exec search firm, actually, and we talked about this. He wanted more recruiting brain food content on exec search. And I said, okay, great. You helped me view some. But then we talked about it and we had a joke. And it was obviously still a very confidential driven type of function. People don't like to share because it's, you know, oftentimes illegally bound, contractually bound not to do so. So I think that's a hidden market for me. I'd love to know more about how how it all works within that segment. Okay, guys, we're kind of moving towards the end of the show, so I don't want to take too much more of everyone's time. Before I let everyone go, though, I just want, it would be foolish for me to get three amazing sources on screen here and not ask some cheapo questions. So I want to start away. What is the one tool that you rely on more than any other? And what is a new tool that you've discovered recently that you think, you know what, that's kind of cool, I'm going to deep dive in a little bit further. So the one thing that you rely on, something that you think is a go-to thing you always use. Guillaume, I'll go to you first.
I'm going to be cheeky there. I think the tool I use the most is Excel.
Right, fair enough.
And mastering Excel, because when you've got a lot of data that you need to order, and when you gather, I've been doing that yesterday, 17,000 tweets that I gathered that you need to search into, there is no best place, for me, there is no better place than Excel.
Absolutely. And by the way, someone just shared I don't know what it was, but there was something that went online this week that said, hey, here are 10 functions on Excel that you really need to know. And I just thought, yeah, everyone needs to know those because it's going to make it a lot faster for you to learn these things. So someone dig that out and share it. But yeah, okay, new tool then, Guillaume.
I'm definitely in love with Phantom Buster because when you need to get data at scale, my tech stack hasn't, my recruitment stack hasn't moved a lot lately. Just because I've got everything I need at that point. And Phantom Buster, which is like an API connection tool, so where you can gather a lot of data very easily in the right way. You're meeting. And is the tool I'm the most in love with still. So if I had to tell one, that saves me so much time and it helps me to do things at scale I wouldn't be able to do it myself.
Okay, cool. Phantom Buster. I tried to share the link there and I nearly broke my crowdcast, so someone please share the link to Phantom Buster in the chat stream. Okay, moving to you, Catherine, what's the one tool that you use kind of in a mundane sense, and what is the new thing that you've discovered that you think, you know what, that might be quite cool to investigate further?
I think similar to Guillaume, probably the thing I spend most time in is Google Sheets, because it's so easy to collaborate and sort data. It's so easy to get stuff you know, imported from one place into there, you know, whether that be, you know, using a scraping tool or something like, you know, if this, then that. Yeah, if I've Google Sheets a lot. New stuff, similar to you again, my sourcing stack hasn't done a lot of evolving lately. Probably the newest thing I've been using is just the contact plugin Rocket Reach. It's one of those plugins that you use with LinkedIn to get contact information, similar to Lusher and Contact Out and those ones. I recently added that, and it's been a nice complement to other tools, you know, finding a few new contact details for people. So
cool. Can someone please share Rocket Reach into the chat stream, please? That would be good to have a link on there. Okay, thank you, Catherine. How about you, Aaron? I'll finish with you. What is the one mundane tool? What is the one new tool that you use on the sourcing side?
We are boring folk. So the coolest thing I learned from Google Sheet, yeah, because that's the tab that's always open. Thanks. And of course, my phone thinks I'm
opening Google Sheets.
Exactly. So I learned that if you copy and paste a Google Sheet into a Google Slide, you can refresh the data. So you can actually keep your content current and have pretty charts for managers to look at. Because that's what they really want to see, is a pretty chart.
Don't screenshot this thing. You need to embed it into the slide so that the data can be alive, so you don't have to keep redoing it. There's an efficiency right there.
I've turned it into a dashboard that I can show. It's highly repeatable, and I don't have to go editing slides because I'm not nobody's a fan of that. If they are, they're crazy. The other one that I use a lot, which is kind of a trick one, is called Mod Header. So it's Chrome extension that it's kind of a secret. That's like it's complicated, but you can push data into using Chrome. Like while I was doing this, I pulled up I took a picture of the people joining the attendees, so I was able to use the API in Crowdcast by stealing the key and playing around with the API while we were getting bored. So I've played with Airtable. It's cute. I think that there's Smartsheet, there's these other tools that do it. Google just does it so well, and it's free and it's integrated. There was companies in America here that sell, alkaline water, specially formulated to 0.2%. It's water. It's hydrogen and oxygen combined. It's water.
And by the way, I love Airtable as well, because they're kind of trying to make a spreadsheet look better, but also a little bit more powerful and putting a bit more kind of a database type feel to it. But at the same time, I don't think it's that significant an upgrade from a Google Sheet. That you can use just as well. So, okay, Aaron, thank you very much for that. I want to leave you with a few of my own, actually. Not that I'm a sourcer anymore, someone mentioned Auto Text Expander earlier today. I want to just highlight that, because that is a super important Chrome extension for me, because obviously I'm sending a million emails every week, and I do get lots of people reply back. Auto Text Expander is really efficient way to write a canned email back to people in a much nicer manner than you would otherwise do. All it does is basically record back. You can write an email into that, and it'll basically, with a shortcut on a keyboard, you can return with this. Second thing I want to say, no one's mentioned yet, is a product I like a lot, particularly if you found yourself with a lot of data that you need to clean up, is a Text Mechanic. And this is a simple tool. You use it, you upload a bunch of text, you want to remove spaces, add colons, you want to change things around. You could probably do a lot of that with spreadsheets as well, but I find it a little bit cleaner for data that is in formats that's not in a spreadsheet. Text Mechanic is my one I would leave you with. Okay, that's about it. So I just want to say thank you, everyone, for watching this show. I hope you've learned as much as I have. Certainly, I've learned a lot more about the place of sources in the recruiting world. And more importantly, what is the mentality that we're looking for? Once again, we'll be writing the show notes up on this and we'll be distributing that on LinkedIn and Facebook and other places. So I think we're going to do PDFs again. So if you want a PDF, please comment on any of the channels you see and I'll send you the PDF on the write-up that we've got. And we'll kick it off from there. Final word, I just want to say thanks again to our sponsors, Seen by Indeed. If you want the shortcut from all of this and you want to hire software engineers, go check out Seen by Indeed. Definitely a product that's making waves in that matching space. We'll be back next week with Robin Schooling talking about open hiring. Open hiring meaning no CV, no interview. First person who applies for the job gets the job. Totally crazy, right? But the Body Shop actually made the news this week or last week where it was a case of sort of saying, this is how we're doing it. And they're demonstrating that maybe, in fact, you might get just as a productive worker as a result of this randomized recruiting. Let me tell you a secret. This has always been a dream of mine to create a company that actually did this, just randomized recruiting. You know, is it all BS? Is everything we're doing completely pointless? Just go out and hire people and see whether you make a company out of it. Anyway, the Body Shop seem to be doing it. Robin Schooling tells me actually that this has been going on for 30 years. Some companies have practiced this a long time. So we're going to be talking open hiring and what is the place of assessments for next week. You can follow the channel now if you want to take a look at that show. Okay, I think that's about it. Thank you, everyone, for joining. Thank you, Aaron Lintz, firstly, for being co-host today. Been great to have you on, sir. Thank you, Guillaume Alexandre. And thank you, Catherine Robinson, for joining us as well. Thanks, everyone, who's been watching on all three streams. Have a good weekend. We will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good show. Thanks.
Take it easy, Aaron.
Yeah, cheers.